And for each and every one of you who have named the name of Christ, who are devoted to Him, who spend much time then, as we saw in the Sermon on the Mount this morning, we hope and trust in almsgiving, doing good for others, in prayer, and in fasting even, so much so that you give your time even to be here on a Sunday night, most of you for a second time, to glorify our God and study of Him. For those of you that have been here regularly now, I say we're almost completing a third month in a study of the life of Joseph and lessons that are derived from the life of Joseph, as outlined in a little book called The Joseph Code by Don Bassett. And tonight will be the next to the last of those lessons. We'll be bringing this series to an end next week. The following Sunday, Don and I will be up in Washington. And then the Sunday after that, April 7th, I believe it is, Don Patton will be speaking. So we'll be bringing this series to a close, starting another one about 3 weeks from now. So you've been seeing photographs of Egypt. Not sure, the dating is difficult. Perhaps Joseph might have actually laid eyes on this particular temple. There are many monuments, statues, and certainly the pyramids and all the gargantuan proportions that demonstrate the great wealth and power of Egypt at that time. And since we have been spending 3 months, of course, on the life of Joseph then, the outline of that life has become very familiar with us, or to us. Joseph had much reason to have a chip on his shoulder. His brothers hated him simply because God had picked him to have the revelation of these dreams, and therefore a prophetic view of the future, which would be played out there at the end of the book of Genesis. His brothers, out of their hatred, sold him into slavery, partly because of the jealousy that they had as well for him being the favored son of his father, of course. And we learn in the Psalms, but not the book of Genesis, that he was chained while being dragged off into Egypt by the Midianites. Potiphar then, of course, enslaved him. Potiphar's wife lied about him, threw him into jail. The cupbearer, as this particular illustrator suggests, then in the interpretation of his dream, completely forgot about Joseph, though Joseph had specifically asked him to remember him and perhaps to help him then to be freed from jail. Joseph had a lot of reason to be unhappy with the way things gone in his life. But last week, we were looking at both the scriptures directly involving Joseph and a number of others that deal with vengeance, with the desire to try to get payback. And the lesson that we'll be looking at this evening kind of fits sort of hand in glove with that lesson as well, sort of the converse here, as we'll be dealing with how to properly relate to these people who mistreat us, and really to everybody, whether they even know who we are or not. And so I'd like to start this evening, though, with adding something that we have not yet talked about to the list of grievances that Joseph might have had. In chapter 43 and in verse 32, it says, when Joseph recognized his brothers, but he, Joseph, is still, a very high-ranking Egyptian official. It says, they served him by himself and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat bread with the Hebrews, that is loathsome to the Hebrews. So the Egyptians have known something about these people going all the way back to Abraham, who had visited in Egypt. And for whatever reasons that are not described for us here, there is apparently a racial component to this. The Hebrews and eating with the Hebrews was just disgusting to the Egyptians. It wouldn't do it. So they had to have, their special locations here. If we're going to have even the semblance of some kind of a meeting or dinner together, we're still going to separate ourselves, to demonstrate how these Egyptians looked down on these people. This is brought up again 3 chapters later, chapter 46, verse 34. This time we have a reason ascribed to it. You may live in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is loathsome to the Egyptians. So maybe it was that that was involved in chapter 43. Maybe it was just national tensions, racial tensions. You know, we're not for sure about the previous one. But for some reason, Egyptians, you know, just found shepherds to be revolting to them. So that seems ridiculous to us, particularly in a state that's so given over, you know, to sheep as Oregon is. But, you know, when is it going to end that Joseph and his people now are despised? They're looked down on. They're mistreated. And Joseph has just had a rather lengthy string of these kinds of problems. He's been offended. He's been mistreated. He's been humiliated. How? Well, that would caught me. Excuse me. I didn't feel that one coming. How does that make you feel when people treat you like that? Now, brother, pardon me for a minute. This is going to get really personal. But I was thinking about this lesson. And then an event that transpired in my life when I was a teenager, just exactly the same year that Joseph was sold into slavery. An event happened at this high school in California to me that I never forgot. Now, I snapped this picture when I went back to visit 4 years ago. So this is the same buildings, you know, where I did my first 2 years of high school. And there on the Palos Peninsula, I got involved in some sort of a verbal altercation with the librarian. I can't remember what it was. But I'm a headstrong teenage kid, you know, and so I got, as I've identified it here, lippy with the librarian. I can't remember what the deal was, but as I think about it, there's no doubt in my mind that I was way out of line. I was being a typical arrogant teenager and thinking much more highly of myself than I ought to, and I was giving this poor woman a bunch of grief, and so the library, whoever was in it, there were quite a number of people, and a couple of them were right at my side, my good friends, while this is going on, and I'm giving her this hard time. Everybody's paying attention as this gets a little bit loud, when all of a sudden, that librarian, I kid you not, this woman, maybe in her mid-40s, suddenly comes at me. She puts one hand on the back of my collar. She grabbed my belt like this, and she lifted me off the floor and threw me out of her library. I was never so mortified in my entire life. All my friends were watching, and I thought I was showing everybody how tough, you know, and smart, you know, and fearless I was. And the next thing I know, I had been so humiliated by this woman that I was just ready to, you know, I was going to have to move. I couldn't go to high school there ever again. It was terrible. So when that happens to you, somebody mistreats you, puts you down, what is the natural zone your head goes into? I want, you know, payback. And so I'll never forget this, brethren. I then spent days and days almost stalking this woman. This is an aerial view of the high school. A moment ago, we were down in here, you know, at that curb and looking at that building right there. Please note, these are very heavily trafficked roads down here in Southern California. There's a parking lot right here that's used only for visitors to come into the main office. All the students are in this big parking lot right here, but it took me a while to figure out in the teacher's parking lot, in that strip right there, which car was hers. And I plotted my revenge for quite a long time. I discussed it with my friends. We had been told and heartily believed that if you would pour sugar in the gas tank of a car, you would wreck that whole car. It would cost a lot to get that entire engine cleaned out and working again. And baby, I was ready. So I'm plotting my revenge because I'm not getting the respect. I've been humiliated. I've been mistreated. I've been put down. Fortunately, I never did it. I did, in fact, finally rein myself in, and I thought, well, you know, I mean, it is shameful what happened to you and all of that, but you did have it coming, I thought. I knew. And, you know, is this fair? You know, and her husband, and, you know, I'm going to take a lot of money, and I couldn't bring myself to do it. So I didn't do it. But I lived in darkness, brethren, for days while I was plotting that revenge. I imagined myself doing that time and time again. And I came that close. I'm surprised that I didn't do it. Now, as it turns out, for those of you who have a heart for vengeance, I learned only today while I was studying this that it wouldn't have worked anyway. It's another one of these common myths, you know, that people come up with. So it wouldn't have worked. But nonetheless, how wrong is that? How completely overboard is that? And how natural and human and normal that is? And how, as we've learned in week after week of looking at Joseph's life, you know, from a young age, what an amazing human being this kid and then this young adult is to resist all of those things. Now, you saw, heard the scripture reading as we start our assembly this evening. When he was a slave, what was he? The best slave there ever was. And he showed the opposite of vengeance, respect. That's our theme for the night now. Respect for the man that was his master. Respect for all the possessions of that man. Respect for that man's business. And he did nothing but good to Potiphar. When the wife tried to betray her own husband with Joseph, what was Joseph? A model of respect, first for his God and then for the slave master. It'd be pretty easy for most people to think, oh, here's an opportunity. I'll show him farthest thing from it. Not only was he not a man of vengeance, but as we've read these verses several times in preceding weeks, his first and foremost thought is for God and for Potiphar. He tells the woman, I, you know, would have never done such a thing to him, and I'm not going to start now. This ability to respect that which is another's is what we want to spend a little bit of time working with here this evening. Now, this prompted me and reminded me of Luke chapter 16. There's a couple of verses in addition to this that I decided we wouldn't work with here this evening, but one of my all-time favorite passages of Scripture, at least, and in Luke 16, verses 12 and 13, just to take the last part of it, if you have not been faithful in the use of that which is another's, somebody else's possessions, if you haven't been faithful with that, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters. Either he'll hate the one and love the other, or else he'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. Now, when we boil these two verses down right here, brethren, and think, you know, globally, faithful in the use of that which is another's. Careful, you know, don't answer too quickly. What is it that you own, control, or use of anything you know in this life that is yours? What's the proper answer? It's nothing. Because God in heaven has what? He's given you absolutely everything over which you have the smidgen of authority or control. There isn't anything in this life that we have because we're so smart, because we're so capable, because, you know, we've done this and such. It's all of it a gift from God. It's always been a gift from God. If you're not faithful in the use of that which is His, everything you ever experience in this life, who will give you that which is your own? Who would give you then possession and mastery over things that you actually could own? It's just a way of saying, much like we saw in the Sermon on the Mount this morning, you know, you'll have no reward if you misbehave like this. And then you can't serve two masters. You've got to pick. And this works on numerous levels. certainly between you and God, but take the example we were just talking about with Potiphar. Joseph had to make up his mind. Is he going to serve Potiphar or the wife when the great test comes? He can't serve both masters. He's got to choose. He picks Potiphar when he's thrown in jail. You can just imagine how many of these prisoners with all kinds of bad attitudes and behaviors, you know, would be sorely tempting Joseph to kind of play the game with their side of being prisoners. And instead, what does he do? He chooses to show respect to the jailer. He chooses to show respect to all the operations of the jail. And just like with Potiphar, everything his hand touches bears fruit and succeeds. And so Joseph shows respect for everybody in every circumstance that we find him in. Far from vengeance, he's doing the best that he can to help Potiphar to make more money, to help both the prisoners and the jailer be happier, you know, get a properly functioning prison system going here. Everything he does is the embodiment, the epitome of this lesson we'll learn from Jesus so many years later in Luke chapter 16. What do you have that you didn't get from somebody else? But I also, brethren, like to just extend this a little bit, and then we'll see it in the succeeding verses as we bring this lesson to a close. But it's easy, I think, with this passage in particular, to kind of be very narrow in our thinking, and we see, well, I got to be faithful, you know, to my God. I can't serve two masters. I got to pick God. Already I've tried to extend that in the life of Joseph, you know, and how he behaved with Potiphar, how he behaved in the prison. But think, brethren, about how many things that we're going to interact with in our lives that are not our own in different senses. Are we subjects of a government? Sure we are. And in this government, where we have tremendous rights and privileges, you know, to be free and to speak our mind, do we ever hesitate to give a piece of our mind on how the government works? I'll give you just, you know, one example. My wife and I lived for many years, 23 years, out in the country, beautiful area, you know, but real country. And we had a little 35-mile-an-hour road run along, you know, in a T road that came up to it. So you couldn't drive through, you know, there was a T. We lived there for 23 years. And on those 23 years, there was a stop sign for the road that was coming up to the T, and there were no stop signs if you were passing through. Never saw an accident, never had a problem, lived there for 23 years. You know, the main line road was like this. Fewer people came up, they made a left or a right. And what are you going to do if you're coming to a T anyway? You're going to slow down, you're going to look. And then one day, the government came along, and they put in two stop signs, and now there's three. Now, every day I got to stop both ways. I wanted to go down and buy a bag of sugar. Who do they think they are? You know, this is just stupid. And every time I'd come up to it, I'd think, this is just stupid. It worked before. Yeah. I'm just constantly tempted to not respect that realm which was another's. What do I really know about traffic control? Have I studied it? Do I know why they put those stop signs there? No. How many times in my life have I criticized someone or something and then later found out why it was so effective, why it was such a good idea? All I'd been doing is grousing and griping because of my own ignorance. I didn't understand it. So, brethren, you know, unless you're an expert in the field that you're criticizing, when you start going on and on, you know, about how wrong everything is on the laws of the land and how we're taxed in the criminal court system and, you know, all of that, and we just get angrier and angrier and angrier about everything that's wrong because, after all, we are infallibly correct in our assumptions about how the country and the world ought to be run, aren't we? Is that ours? Is that our own? Do we really know anything about any of these things? No. How do you feel about the college admissions scandal? Well, terrible. Hang them high. All the rest of that. And brother, we went through this with the vengeance thing last week, and we're doing it again. I don't know what the proper sentence is for Manafort and the rest of these people. I don't know what was going on in Lori Loughlin's life or Felicity Huffman or any of the bankers and real estate people and all the rest of that. I don't know what was going on in any of these people's lives. And so who am I to pass a judgment on anybody all the way through that whole thing? This isn't my realm. I'm not the judge. So I'll just tell you what I've started doing. You see if you think that it's smart, maybe to be helpful for you. But I have really been trying, with only tiny little success, don't ask Donna how well I've been doing at this. But consciously, I've been trying to teach myself to say, when people come, they ask me, they engage me about this, that, and another thing, and all that's on their mind is how wrong this thing is and how they think that it ought to be done. I've been trying to say in return, you know what? I don't have an opinion on that. I haven't studied that. I don't know anything about that. You know, and so I just really can't help you here. I've tried to be a lot less sugarfied in my understanding of the rights and wrongs in the world of today. I need to learn to respect others and what is not my realm, my authority, my expertise, my power. I just need to be more like Joseph. So, when Joseph gets thrown into prison, does he now use his authority to make life miserable for anybody? No. He respects everybody. So I think what we're coming down to in the example that we have in all these 13 chapters regarding Joseph at the end of the book of Genesis is, again, something we'll be reading in Romans chapter 13 and verses 7 through 10. Let's just take 7. Render to all what is due them. Unless, of course, you don't like the tax you're paying and you've been watching C-SPAN and CNN, and so you're furiously unhappy about, you know, the whole tax structure, and it ought to be this, got to be that, and everything. How much of all those caveats are in this verse? This is none. Render to all what is due them. Tax to whom tax is due. I know who my tax is due to. Is it my responsibility to control how they spend that money? No. Will I frequently see them doing things with that money that I don't like? Well, yeah. So what should I do about it? Run for office. Or respect the fact that you don't know what you're talking about. You're not involved in the tax system. You're not changing the tax system. You don't even know how it runs. What are you supposed to do according to Romans 13:7? Just pay it and be happy. That's the end of the matter. Like Joseph did in prison. Like he did in the pit, I guess. Like he did everywhere. Render all what is due. Tax to whom tax. Custom to whom custom. Fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. And if you learn anything in your New Testament, government officials, we haven't read the first six verses, but I know you know the first six verses of Romans 13. Every last one of them, including Nero and Caligula, came to their power because who put them there? Because God put them there in those first six verses. Because every government there is under God's control. And we don't know his mind. We don't know what it is he's wanting to accomplish with them. And maybe they are like the Babylonians, the most wicked people there ever were. But those people are the ones picked to punish the Jews, who were themselves unfaithful, in need of punishment. So that, brethren, one day this nation will fall like every other. How can we be different? It's coming. In the meantime, you know my favorite refrain, those of you who have been here very often, don't worry, be happy. You remember that old song? Render to all what is due. Show respect. And therefore, behave properly when you're dealing in realms that are not your own.
where you're subject to somebody else's power or possessions or whatever. Just be a good steward of what God gave you. Pay your taxes, customs, fear, and honor to the people that God put into power, whether you voted for them or not. In verse 8, owe nothing to anyone except to love one another. For he who loves his neighbor, unless he's a politician, a tax gatherer, or the guy that puts stop signs out. So you don't have those caveats. No, you owe nothing to anyone except to love them. For he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law. Should you only love the neighbor who really respects you and likes you and tell you how great you are? No, you love every neighbor. That's the rule. Verse 9, for this, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and you shall not pour sugar into gas tanks. If there's any other commandment, verse 9 says, it is summed up in this saying, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. You don't hate him, you don't resent him, you're not bitter, you're trying to love your neighbor as yourself. And believe me, Joseph had enough cause to be tempted to hate him. And so does everybody from Joseph to today. And a lot of things that aren't right in the world. I'm pretty sure my life has not been as messed up as Joseph's was. I am pretty sure that I've spent more time misbehaving than Joseph ever did when it came to those kind of frustrations. And now here comes verse 10. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. Now, this isn't saying a wrong that you just imagined out of the blue for no reason whatsoever. Joseph had many reasons to seek vengeance, to seek payback, to seek some form of reparation for the harm that truly had been done to him. But love does no wrong to a neighbor is not qualified. Not to the good neighbor, not to the rich neighbor, not to the funny neighbor. There aren't any qualifiers. You just do no wrong to a neighbor of any kind or stripe. Therefore, that's why love is the fulfillment of the law. Now I'm going to close with one last passage that I think shows how deeply all of this is to go. So far, you know, we've been thinking about governments. Well, we thought about God, we thought about governments, we thought about, you know, various aspects of our lives. But look, even here in Proverbs 12, verse 10, a righteous man has regard for the life of his animal. But even the compassion of the wicked is cruel. So even when you're just dealing with livestock, when you're dealing with cats and dogs, when you're dealing with anything, there is, God hopes, the recognition that you did not create these beasts. They are yours because God has given them to you. Behave like a righteous person. That is, with compassion. From the whole scale at the top with God through every government and all powers and, you know, that there are, your neighbor of any kind, and even the animals of the world. Because love, brethren, is to be cultivated in our hearts above all things. And what love is respect for the other, for those that are apart from us. And not being, as I was with my high school librarian, who I still remember after all these years, for the humiliation she caused me. My role is to master myself, to bring myself under discipline and subjection, to recognize we are all here because God gives us our next breath. Let us remember that. We are about, as I am so fond of also saying, to sally forth into the world Sunday's drawing to a close here in this assembly. We all go our separate ways. We are all going to be tempted in so many different ways. We are all of us going to live utterly different lives. We all have so many different things that need to be taken care of. Take care of them with love and respect for anyone that could be called a neighbor, even down to just the animals that you come into contact with. This is our responsibility before God. Vengeance? Never. Respect and love in all things for the little while that is a vapor, and then we go to judgment. You ready for the week? Yeah. Let's go out there and really show the world that when somebody does me dirt, I'm going to follow the Joseph code. Okay? Now, I'll see you out there. Now, if there is anyone in the assembly, of course, who has been studying, wants to come to Christ this evening, believing His gospel, repenting of your sins, confessing that Jesus is the Lord, Son of the living God, being baptized for the forgiveness of those sins, and rising to walk in newness of life, please come forward, let that be known. If you have a prayer request or a Bible study request of any kind, again, let it be known. As we sing our final song now,